Oh, this is going to be a good one. This is going to be a good one. We're going to get to see if Mike has changed his mind about Corey Brewer. That's what everyone's waiting for. The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is brought to you by Kornblau and Kornblau, the official law firm of The Process, and LL Pivorsky Jewelers, where Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners go and get engaged. On the show today, how about it? Pop can suck it. Bellinelli can suck it. And a mailbag and a jigsaw. Corey Brewer's upper lip hair. It's going to be awesome. Before we get going, the Rights to Ricky Sanchez snapback hat, there's only 76 of them. They go on sale Friday night at midnight at kineticskateboarding.com. The only place you can get it is kineticskateboarding.com. That is Friday night at midnight. What I mean by that is if it's Friday, wait until midnight that night. Seems to be like confusion sometimes to what Friday night at midnight means. And also you have until Friday to enter the contest to win a spot in Paul Green's adult band camp. Paul Green Rock Academy adult band camp starts February 4th. Practice 8 times, play 2 gigs, have fun. No pressure, only fun. Register at rightsrickysanchez.com/Paul Green. Without any further ado, here is Run the Jewels.
We are the murderers there. There with the jail and we murdered the murderers there. Then with the hell and discovered the devil delivered some hurt and despair. Used to have powder to push. Now I smoke pounds of the kush. Holy, I'm burning the bush. Now I give a fuck about none of this shit. Jew runner over and out of this bitch. Step into the spotlight.
Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with a guy who is questionable with yet another upper respiratory infection, but he is here to shove it up the ass of Marco Bellinelli. It's Mike Levin. Mike, give it to me, buddy.
Oh, baby, that was nice.
That was a good one. That was such a good one.
It was relief, just like many exhales. I have to just like shake my body out after how tense that was. Really nice. Really nice win. Against a team, Spike.
Yeah.
Against a team that was hitting an inordinate amount of tough shots.
Yeah. I think we've been saying this a lot over the last year or two, but mostly this year. They always lose this game. Oh. This is not a game they win.
They lost this game 5 days ago.
This is a game where, like, it's close, and then as soon as San Antonio gets up 8 with 3 minutes left, that is a fucking wrap.
Yeah.
It's a wrap. We turn it over twice. We miss a 3, and maybe we hit a couple shots in the closing seconds, but we never win that game. This proves the Sixers were fine to let Bellinelli go. It proves that Greg Popovich is a fucking fraud coach, I think pretty obviously. I don't know, a lot of things. Man, maybe the difference is if the Spurs had the slight upgrade over Patty Mills and Kyrie Irving, they would be just exactly where they need to be.
I don't know. I think Mills is probably better than Irving tonight. let's talk about that last play. Good. How about this?
Yeah.
Brett Brown adjusts. J.J. Redick not guarding the ball.
Yeah.
Muscala guarding the ball. You could say there's like less time on the clock, which I guess there was maybe 6 seconds in that OKC game when they were passing the ball, and this time there was 1.1 or 1.2. Muscala guarding the ball and jumping up and down, harder to pass it where they want to pass it, had to force a pass to a very tightly covered Marco Bellinelli, former Sixer, if you hadn't heard from every single national broadcast. Ever.
I almost watched that so I could hear it, and I didn't. I just watched the local one. So
I have no choice. I'd have to watch the national one. But Simmons with a great knockaway. Just a really, look, was not a perfect game by any means, but the Spurs were hitting shots.
Disagree.
And playing well, and they're so good at taking you out of what you want to do and making you pay for like dumb mistakes and not having enough defenders to cover all their guys. And a lot of times that worked, but just like, to end the game, did they end the game on a 10-0 run?
They must have.
I think it was.
Because they won by 2, right?
9-0, and then Corey Brewer
won 2. The one Brewer free throw.
Yeah. I mean, really, really, really strong way to end that game, and they are so far doing very good in their murder stretch.
Yeah.
Simmons 21, 15, and 10 with great defense throughout. Embiid 33, 19. Well, it's really good to have good players on our team.
So I wanted to talk about Embiid specifically on this one, and I wanted to talk about Chandler, who we have to give credit to.
Living man Wilson Chandler.
Yep. Before we do, I'm doing the Willie Green 5-star Apple Podcast review. 2,149. We'd love to get to 3,000. I love this one. This comes from the Truer G3. I got credit for celebrating a second-round pick with professional handshakes with my fellow process trusters 4 years after it happened, which is the most process thing ever. This was the second-best thing of the year, trailing only the Corey Brewer game. Thank you, guys, at Ricky Sanchez. Subject line, Willie Hernan Gomez Stan. 5 stars. So,
he's on the shirt.
All right. Willie Hernan Gomez is on the shirt, and the video that AU said that he's never seen and didn't think existed is now on the internet of those guys shaking each other's hands after Hernan Gomez got drafted. So first Chandler, obviously World War Z zombie on that block on DeRozan. So Chandler, by and large, I would say for the last 2 weeks has looked more spry on defense.
Agree, for right? sure.
Yeah. Definitely looks like he's old man warming up to the season. Only took him 50 games, but whatever. And actually taking a couple of threes when he's moving a little bit, like not just totally standing still. And mm-hmm. I don't like grit my teeth every time he takes it. But I will say this, another credit to Brett. So it's that final possession, and there is DeRozan at the top of the key, and they choose to have Chandler on him. And I will be honest, I am thinking, well, that's a fucking mistake. Like, there's no way. He's definitely getting shot off. And, like, look, he got by Chandler a little bit, but who thought that the Amir Johnson dunks wouldn't be the surprise jump of the year, that it would come from Wilson Chandler? That block on DeRozan was fucking sick.
Great defense.
Where did that come from?
Just stay with him. I think Brett played him because he likes Ben on the smaller guys. Ben might have been covering Hattie Mills in that play or Derek White. Wilson's just so much more physical, and I think he knows that they're not calling those fouls on those body fouls right in the game.
And that was clean
on that. It was a clean play, yeah. Absolutely. He got up and kept his hand straight up, and man, really good play. DeRozan is just really good, and we seem to never be able to stop him. I don't know if anybody else does. We at least limited him getting to the line, but 12 of 19 from the field for 26 points. We could talk about it later, but they did such a good job of running double teams at Harden and making life a little difficult for him, at least mm-hmm. to get easy shots off. He's going to get those step backs to some point. To some extent, I'd rather cover Harden and just ask him to drive the lane. Just like, here, go, please take the lane. I cede 2 points to you, because he's just automatic and JJ's not stopping that. But they didn't do a good job of getting DeRozan off his spots. He seemed to just get wherever he wanted. But at the end there, man, that's a tough game to win. We don't win that game. And I think you can tell that the team is playing with a lot of cohesion. And maybe it's because Jimmy's not there. Maybe it's because Corey Brewer has fucking juiced everybody up. But
yeah, we got to talk about Corey Brewer.
Yeah, I mean, 35 assists on 47 makes and only 11 turnovers. And that's a great game. That's the way you have to play against a really disciplined team in the Spurs.
Embiid, I want to talk about Embiid's game specifically because, so LaMarcus Aldridge, you don't think of as being like a load, but he is, mm-hmm. and he is really, he's not like a impressive defender to the eye, but he's very disciplined, and he's exactly the kind of guy that gives Embiid trouble because he doesn't really bite on anything. Like,
yeah.
So Embiid does all his moves, and he
very
winds up.
Very verticality guy.
Yeah, like Embiid will do move, and then turn to the basket, and Aldridge is just standing there waiting there. So every shot was tough. He definitely struggled to get going, But for him to have that much trouble in the game to start, and he had a did not have a great first half at all, for him to have that much trouble in the game to start and still wind up with the line he wound up with, 34-19 or whatever, and it was so much work to get there, I thought was impressive. Like it wasn't one of the most impressive games Embiid has played to the eye, like just skill-wise, but I thought the way that he persevered through a game that, like, this could have really ended up being one of the 17-12 Embiid games where he shoots 8 of 23 and, you know, and just like frustrates his way. And because he's on the floor a lot and because he's talented, he winds up with numbers. But I thought he really persevered through this game and ended up making like such a difference. Obviously, we'll get to Ben in a second, but I thought it was an impressive game for Embiid because it did not come easy for him.
Yeah, I mean, 7 offensive rebounds against a pretty good disciplined team. And I mean, LaMarcus Aldridge only had 5 rebounds. Embiid was all over him. Pirtle had really stood no chance whatsoever. Embiid led the team with a plus 12, plus minus, and you felt it when he's on the court and when he's not. Yeah, I mean, he's really good, and I worry about the back. I think you have to, but it seems like he's just going to manage it and hang in there, and hopefully it's not a thing where you need like off-season surgery or something. I don't know what kind of pain that is, that he, if it's correctable or if it's just like this is just something you're going to have to live with for the rest of your career. 2 for 4 from 3, just being able to stretch the D like that. I mean, a couple big blocks during that 9-0 stretch before those last couple possessions. They were down 8. And Embiid and Simmons' defense allowed Brett to go, well, I need another shooter out there. I'm going to put Shamit in. Brett goes offense-defense with Shamit and Corey Brewer, something that we've been asking him to do for a long time. And it works. I mean, it's not going to work every time, but like the Shamit got a big 3 from the corner on a, I think it was on a Simmons drive, and Brewer, I think, stole the ball at one point or like bothered somebody and poked it out. Like, that's what you want. I mean, be quick on those things, and that's helpful. And so because Embiid and Simmons are so, like, can anchor a defense on their own, it's like, all right, well, we can gamble a little bit offensively because we got these guys behind us.
And then, what was I going to say? Ben.
He's really good.
Yeah, so he has played, I would say... I know people point to the win streak at the end of last year as his best stretch, but like, and I don't want to say it was easy. It wasn't easy, but like that was the perfect setup for him to excel, right? It was not just bad teams, but without Embiid being in there, it was the, here's a team surrounded by him. He can run, It all sort of contributed to an environment that favored him specifically. I think since Butler got here, his play since then has definitely been by far the best of his career. Like I was saying, he probably won't start the All-Star team because he's labeled a guard and Wade will probably start. And even if you're just going to think pure guard, I think Beal like makes a lot of sense there too. But he's clearly has played one of the 5 best players in the Eastern Conference so far this half.
Yeah,
getting better because he's there is something. I hate to do the Simmons thing, but he is taking something personally. Like there is definitely a switch that has been flipped within him. Maybe it's Kendall Jenner. Maybe it's Butler getting here. Maybe it's, I don't know what it is, but his willingness to be more than just like a fast break point guard thing.
Yeah.
Like he's doing other things. Like he and Embiid are setting screens for each other 8 feet away from the rim. And it only happens like a few times a game, and it's an awkward thing to do, but sometimes it creates just enough space for one of them to get a shot off.
Yeah.
And I will say that these last few games, and specifically the Houston game and the San Antonio game, maybe the OKC game, but I think the Houston game and the San Antonio game, as far as Embiid and Simmons together, like running things together and looking cohesive, has been more than I think they've ever been in a pair of games. I'm sorry, that was a lot, but
no, I agree. I think this is the best basketball he's played. I think Brett using him as a screen, he's been using him as a screener better this year, and Simmons has, to his credit, rolled to the rim a lot more. That's something in the playoff series against Miami and Boston last year, we were like, he needs to just do that more often. And he has, and he gets easy looks because of it. He had a tough start to this game. There were a couple like just shots that he was in that sort of around the rim, but not like layups or dunks, and he wasn't hitting them. They were rimming out, and he finished the game 9 of 14 from the field, 3 or 4 from the line. Took a couple jumpers, got fouled on a jumper. That's probably the first time that's happened. And hit a couple. That was nice. I mean, he's just really good. He's really good. It's important to remember he is in his second season. He continues to improve. Learning how to like use his body on the defensive end, on smaller guards, and like being able to hang with bigger guys. He can guard 1 through 5, like legitimately. Like, you don't obviously want him banging with fives all the time, but he's a guy who can guard 1 through 5. He can do every single thing on a basketball court except for shoot. And hopefully that's coming along. Like, idea that you'd trade him is just absolute nonsense to me. He's in his second year and he's this good already. He's just going to keep getting better.
Well, and I think he's done something, you know, like I have been critical of him a lot, but like what a couple of the things that I always talked about, and I didn't think he would do this one. I always sort of said, like, look, he's going to have to do one of two things. I still think he needs to shoot, but to be more effective, he's either going to have to start shooting or he's going to have to do some other things when he doesn't have the ball, like screening or like the post-ups, mm-hmm. or like, you know, knowing what to do when somebody else is working with the ball. And he has done those things. I'm glad he takes some of the turnaround jumpers. There was, man, on that one possession where they didn't score when the shot clock ran out, they ran like a little pick and roll, him and Redick, I think, and he had an open 16-footer. And that was a moment where I'm like, oh man, if he's going to have the ball on the perimeter at the end of the game, I really wish he'd take that. Sure. But that is legitimately the only complaint, that one specific play. And look, if he can hit a standstill corner three or something, it will make him berserk. But he's been as good as he's, better than he's ever been. And I'll say this too, man, I do not think they are now 5-2 since the trade. They're 5-2 without Butler, beating Houston and San Antonio back to back, which I think is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
We've been looking for signature wins. They beat Indiana in Indiana, and then beat Houston at home and San Antonio at home.
And should have beat Oklahoma City, if not for...
And should have beat Oklahoma City. And when Butler had a bad game in that game.
Yeah.
I do think there is something to them, that any of my Butler complaints aside, and I have a million of them, and I don't want them. I've said that a million times. But let's make pretend all of the things I'm critical about are not an issue. Just the fact that there's another mouth that they have to worry about feeding in every game. And that three-person thing is not there. And Simmons and Embiid are sort of empowered in that if this is going to happen, it's going to be you guys. And you guys are going to have to do this together. I almost think when he has not played the last couple of games, they have not taken it personally. But my guess is that these games have meant a lot to them. And... them playing the way that they've played together the last couple of games, I think means something. And I think at the very least, when you see things like that, what I would beg Elton Brand to do and front office collaborators and Brett and all that stuff is, I know I've said trade Butler. I think we both think that's pretty unlikely. Go into this offseason with an open mind. That's all I would say. Is like, do not be desperate, because as long as you have those two guys, as long as you have Simmons and Embiid, you do not have to operate as if you are desperate. Like, so if whatever the contract is doesn't feel right, or if however the rest of this year goes with him does not feel right, do not feel beholden to that as if it is your only option, because I think there are other ways. Once Golden State breaks up, maybe there are other ways to build a championship level team other than like stockpiling quote unquote stars. That's all I would say, is consider, just don't make a rash decision because you think you have to. That's all I would say.
I think that that's right. I still lean towards, okay, here a bunch of things to respond to that. I think that's absolutely right, yeah, in the sense that it simplifies things when Jimmy's not in there, right, for now.
Right, because it's just in the like, regular season, for sure.
We do what we can do. And it's not just Jimmy's not there. It's Jimmy's not there, and there's a competent, somewhat knows where to be, defensive-minded guy who's athletic enough to run out and make an impact in transition.
That we're doesn't have talk to about be him.
I know. I mean, he's not... We'll get to Corey Brewer. But like the fact that it is a guy who can defend reasonably well and is athletic enough to just like make stuff happen, that it's just a level of there's like a dynamic level of play that he adds. And I would say the consistent minutes for Jonah Bolden, I would say the same thing. It's like there are guys out there that are starting to make things happen. And sure, like Bolden specifically makes mistakes, and I think Pop took advantage of him a couple times tonight just because it's like he's inexperienced and doesn't always make the right read. But I mean, that two block sequence on Aldridge into a leak out where he had the trailing dunk was just unbelievable. Like Dario level of double block. I love double blocks. The Dario against Toronto that we played at Ricky Live was a favorite of mine. But hey, guys who can defend and can make the extra pass on offense and just be athletic in transition, and you know where the ball is going to go. I think that's sort of the same theory of like only one person can shoot at a time. That's obvious. That's a very obvious thing to say. But like Simmons is right now not taking those 18 footers because he's right. Like, well, I think we can get a better shot than this. And eventually you want to get him to a place where he's like, no, I can hit this at a clip that I can step into corner threes or top of the key threes where I'm competent enough and confident enough in myself to hit this shot that we can't get a better shot than this. But I think he's so like clinical about we can get a better shot than this. Instead of taking that 16 footer, it was, all right, I'm going to pass to Embiid. He bangs inside. They could have called a foul. If there was more time left in the shot clock, that's probably a bucket or at least a foul. But I think without Butler, it's like, it just simplifies things. My thing is, and I've said this before, I wouldn't take the current situation of they play well without Butler and more defenders in there as that's how it's going to be going forward. I just think things take time, and they're still feeling each other out. I think the team, even when Butler was in there, I think they're passing the ball better and using each other more and finding different ways to succeed. And Brett's staggering them in a nice way that makes it feel like they can do different things on the court. But as much as I agree that they are playing better without him right now, I don't think that would be the case if they did sign him to like a big 4-year deal in the offseason.
We'll finish this up in a second. I want to, before we get to Corey Brewer and finish up the Butler conversation, I want to talk about our sponsor, Kornblau and Kornblau, the official law firm of The Process. Look, if you're playing basketball and you fall down and you're being guarded by a guy after you've already fell down right up in your face, as if you're being full court pressed by a guy while you're sitting down and you feel like you've been hurt by that physically, Kornblau is the guy that you go to. He's the official law firm of The Process. Adam Kornblau runs the friggin' law firm with his mom. His parents started it, and now it's him and his mom. They've been there since the 80s, getting the best personal injury results in all of the Delaware Valley, specifically in medical malpractice, because that is their specialty. But look, if you need a trademark even Kornblau is our official trademark lawyer for Lickface, and now we have to put it on a t-shirt and on the tag for some reason. In any case, any sort of personal injury, if you want a guy who is going to give you personal service, really care about you, like a personal injury lawsuit can take a long time, have a lot of steps. You really want somebody that you can trust and that is going to make sure that you know what is going on every step of the way. It's Adam Kornblau and Kornblau and Kornblau, not just medical malpractice. If you are hurt in any respect, a car accident, slip and fall, injured at work, whatever it is, if you think you're hurt, you think you have a case, reach out to Kornblau. You're going to get a Kornblau. Him, his mom, one of the several other Kornblaus they have stored in the closet. Doesn't cost you anything to find out if you have a case. 215-576-7200. Ask for Adam. Or email Kornblau at kornblau@kornblau.com. Kornblau spelled with a K. The and in the email address is spelled out A-N-D. Adam Kornblau, the official law firm of The Process.
Corey Brewer, the 10-day season. Let's go.
All right. One more thing about Butler.
Okay.
I do think it is, and the big question is, who can you get to fulfill that specific skill set? I do think it is more about having someone who can, with his skill set on the court, than him specifically, offensive skill set. Clearly, one of the things they need is somebody who can get their own shot off the dribble and create for others. Now, like, those don't grow on trees, obviously. But I do think they should keep an open mind. Quick question. Just let me ask you this, and then we'll get to Corey Brewer. If your two options were this, Jimmy Butler for 5 years or Mike Conley for 3, same cost, what would you rather have? It's close, right?
Yeah, I think I'd probably go Mike Conley for 3. I've always really liked Conley. He's very good.
Yeah.
And I think I think there are guys that can give you like a facsimile, like slightly better than what the 3 games of Corey Brewer we've had. Like consistency.
What's better than that?
Not the shenanigans, but the box score stuff. I think those guys exist. I mean, I look at like Derek White is a guy that I wanted out of the draft, just like he was old coming out of the draft, but like you just knew he could play, and then the Spurs picked him, and it was like, obviously he's a guy that's just going to be a solid NBA player for a while, like very Brogdon-esque, and he kind of gets lost in the shuffle of the, like, we could have had Kyle Kuzma or Josh Hart or like Dylan Brooks and like Sterling Brown and Jordan Bell, all those guys that they took Pasechniks over and traded up to take Pasechniks over. But like, I don't think it's that hard to find those kinds of guys who are like good enough now, and you can see they have a willingness to defend, and they exist. Like I think, you know, Mike Conley does something that he's a really smart player, and he can stretch the floor, and he's a good team guy, and I don't know if he's still, I haven't looked at the numbers, but I don't know if he's still a good defender, but like has been, as far as point guard defenders go, like is not mm-hmm. a guy that you can just walk past, and would be fine like being the like third banana to Simmons and Embiid.
But, right, which is an important thing.
Yeah, you absolutely.
Know, good guard, point guards, all that kind
yeah.
of stuff. Yeah,
and I think that there's just guys you can find. Like, I hope Zaire is one of them. I think that there's guys that are just, you can, Shamet is going to be here for a while. I think you could just find guys that you can fill in and be like, okay, you're just going to like work hard on defense and like fucking like Dwayne Bacon and like Garrett Temple and like whatever, like anybody, these guys exist, and the Sixers have for so long seemed to be like, we don't give a shit about those, we don't care about them, and they've had an empty roster spot the entire season, and finally they fill somebody on a 10-day and he's a folk hero. We've been dying for 10 days. I 10 days were what saved the Sixers season all during the process era, just for the simple fact of making it interesting. And
saved our lives.
I spent a lot of time watching this fucking team. And Corey Brewer is incredibly weird. His facial hair looks like armpit hair. Everything he does is weird. He makes other people do weird things when he's guarding them. Like, obviously the Harden stuff was very well covered, but like tonight, DeRozan like traveled off of just a regular pass, and then DeRozan like tossed him aside in the paint. and like got called for it. I was like, what the fuck's going on? Why is Corey Brewer getting under anybody's skin? I watch Corey Brewer a lot, especially in college. And you just see him like playing on like Minnesota or Oklahoma City or whatever, or on Houston. And you're like, all right, he's just a guy. Like the Lakers, he's just a guy. He's fine. But I didn't, has he always been this weird? Or is this just like an incredibly weird stretch where he's playing like superheroes with his kids? And now he comes back and he's like, I'm kind of loopy. And I'm just going to be loopy for weeks on end. Pick me up for another 10 day. I'm Corey Brewer.
So there's sometimes that you can go through my specific Twitter feed and see like my honest feelings like evolving as they're happening. And Corey Brewer, as I told you last time, the only thing I remembered was that Craig Kilborn said, who is a Timberwolves fan, was like loved his energy. Like all I heard him talking about basketball for 15 minutes once, and 12 of it was Corey Brewer. So that's all I remembered. So 2 minutes into the Rockets game, my response was, it seems like Corey Brewer really sucks, but in an incredibly endearing way. The next tweet was like, all right, Corey Brewer is my third favorite Sixer. And the next one was like, if they don't sign him the rest of the year, I'm going to fucking kill somebody. Like, he is exactly what the look, I have a realistic expectation of how good Corey Brewer actually is. I get it. I understand. Some of the three-pointers he misses, I'm surprised the glass on the backboard doesn't break. But I just, as a person who watches all of these games, a guy like that is such a nice, like, break. He's the best.
Yeah.
He's so weird.
He's so weird. It's just like he's smiling all the time. He's smiling, like, in a kind of crazy way.
He's so annoying. The other player, it does. So your point about, was he always this weird? The other players seem stunned by it. Like, they're like, what? Like, Harden is like, were you always this weird? Yeah. Why is your facial hair like that?
Harden like vaguely pushes him over and he starts like wacky waving inflatable tube man. Like, guy is like, yeah, stumbling over the court. It's like he's a fucking wrestling heel trying to get the ref's attention. Really good stuff. Really good.
I was thinking, and obviously, like, what did you say the college he played for made you not like him or something?
Florida.
You didn't like him at some point. What's that?
Florida. He played on that Al Horford, okay, Joakim Noah
team. Oh, right. The Spates team. Wasn't Spates on that
team? That was the Spates, I think, was the second year of those guys. Yeah.
The second year. Right. And I also thought he was on the Timberwolves. Now Fly the Process is going to be like this Corey Brewer. Like, when everyone else is thinking it's going to be the Jimmy Butler homecoming, for me, it's going to be like fucking Brewer. But a Brewer jersey during the Houston game.
So you're spending money on Cravon LeBlanc and Corey Brewer this year is what you've decided to do.
Is there anything more like on my brand?
Is it coming out of the Ricky fund? I just want to know if I'm...
No. This is that's my money.
That's fine.
The only thing that comes out of the Ricky fund is charity and microphones and Underberger. That's I bought the Corey Brewer t-shirt, but they have to give him a second 10 day. Now, the worry here is that his second 10-day would end a couple of days before the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. And my guess is they're not going to give him that roster spot for good until they see, excuse me, who gets bought out.
Sure. I would say, you can like cough while I talk if you want.
Thank you.
I would say that I believe in them keeping Corey Brewer more than like... I could see them eating Amir's contract and just being like, he's gone. Or if they like Amir's locker room, just saying like, all right, Korkmaz, like, sorry, fuck off. Like, I could see that happening. I really think that the energy around Brewer and that the not necessarily the fans have latched onto it, although the fans chanting Corey Brewer at Corey Brewer is truly an unforeseen circumstance of the season that we're in and how badly we needed someone to just be a roster guy.
By the way, they did it immediately.
Yeah, right away. Yeah. Unbelievable. But yeah, I think that just what he brings to the table and that just like Brett feeling comfortable with him. Brett obviously talking about how, you know, he brings a guy off the street. Hey, welcome. Here's your jersey. You're wearing 00 in honor of Spencer Hawes. Go cover James Harden. And obviously he didn't do a great job, but he did enough to like piss him off. And Sixers won by like fucking 30. Really nice game. And winning... a couple blowouts, winning a close one, losing a close one. I think that stuff is like, that's character stuff that I think you'd get better. They're going to be a top four seed in the East, especially, you know, we can keep talking about other stuff, but like, obviously Oladipo going down is very sad and it looks like he's probably out for the season. Indiana's still a good team without him. But I don't think that they are a top four seed, without Oladipo for the like 3 months. I don't think they can stay in that for three months. So odds are the Sixers are hosting a playoff series and not having to face Boston, which is huge.
Which is good. Unfortunately, we might have to play the Nets, which.
Sure. Yeah. Too many scoring guards there. But yeah, I just think the team is, you can just tell, I don't know if they were, you know, it seemed like they were always kind of lackadaisical early in the season. Even with the Butler trade, I think they picked it up a little, but whether it's turnovers or whether it's lazy defense, I don't know, Brett felt like he was getting the proper movement and energy and everything out of this team. And I think Corey Brewer infused some life into it. I think being on this ridiculous stretch of 12 tough games, 10 of which are on national television, really like got everybody to nut the fuck up and play hard. But they're playing just really good basketball and fun basketball in a way that they weren't playing earlier this season. And it seems like they're having a good time and they like each other. And that's makes it a lot more fun to watch, especially when they're winning.
I would totally agree. I would say that the Corey Brewer in this particular game, like the Houston game was the Corey Brewer game.
Yeah.
There was a moment in this one, I think, where Brewer hit a three and then Bolden had the two blocks
that
and
was
the dunk?
Back to back. It was a Corey Brewer three. He had two threes from the same spot. It was the Corey Brewer three and then Bolden back to back dunks into a Bolden transition dunk. And I was like, this is the team now. This is who we are. Imagine saying that was going to happen back in December.
Anything from the Houston game?
Well, let's talk about Jonah for a second, because I think Brett was talking about how he likes how confident Jonah is, and it's like borderline like cockiness, and I think that was why he was not as successful at UCLA and why he seemed to wear out his welcome playing in the teams overseas, but you can see that he's like there's game there, and like he had one play today where he was dribbling. There was like actual dribbling at the rim, making the extra pass. Like he's capable and certainly athletic enough to play in the NBA. And I think the other stuff is coming along as the team trusts him more and as he trusts himself more to like sort of inch out of the box that Brett has put him in. But he's certainly shooting. There's no hesitation on him taking threes, which is good. I mean, he's just taking the. He's taking shots at threes and at the rim, and he's hustling on defense. And that's like 90% of it if you're athletic enough. And so I really love him on this team. And I like how they've been using Bolden as Embiid's backup and then having Muscala play the Ilyasova role, because Embiid likes playing with like stretch four types. And I think having Muscala in there as like a secondary rim protector is so much better than having him in there as a primary rim protector. He just can't do it. You put him in the pick and roll and he's just totally unhelpful. But he's gotten a couple blocks. I think he had a couple in that Houston game. And I think in a couple in the Oklahoma City game where he's just like, he's not the guy you're driving at. He's the guy nearby and he's long enough and around the rim enough to be able to like affect shots also. But yeah,
I think the biggest, the biggest change for him is I always, and maybe I'm wrong, like I think we always thought of him as like a 4-3, but he's really a 5-4 and mostly a 5 at this point in his career.
I agree with that.
Is the way he's valuable for us. And they, you know, I think Brett deserves some credit for somehow, you know, finding ways to get these guys up to speed and becoming contributors, especially Bolden, who it appears as if I could be wrong about Bolden. Like he looks like maybe he can play.
Yeah.
Korkmaz is maybe dead. I don't know what happened to him.
Poor guy.
But Bolden as his life as an actual small ball five, has created like real value for him. And him using his athleticism just to block shots and be able to switch on the perimeter, as it's made him valuable.
He's had 7 blocks in the last 3 games, and he's played 11, 12, and 13 minutes in those games. Like, he's impacting the game a lot. And I think he fouls like crazy, and sometimes they call it, and sometimes he just fouls out. Sometimes they're like, we can't keep calling fouls on this fucking guy. Maybe that's just how he plays. And so he makes guys come in, and he's so physical with them that it affects their shot a lot. Like, I think there was an Aldridge play where he was expecting a foul. There was a DeRozan play where he was expecting a foul, and Bolden was already going the other way with it because he just basically shoved him to the ground, and they're like, well, I'm not going to call every one. And so far it's working. It's amazing that Corey Brewer and Jonah Bolden have made this team fun, but here we fucking are.
Killer bees, Corey Brewer and Jonah Bolden.
Let's talk for 2 seconds about the fourth quarter lineup, where no Simmons, no Embiid, no Redick. How did you feel about that?
So we're recording this immediately after the game. There's no doubt Brett was asked about that in postgame. I wonder if there was a reason that happened. Like, I don't know. I know how they have their times that they rest. I don't know what Embiid's back was. It was a terrible lineup. It seemed like a horrible decision. They won. I don't know if getting them the breather then, like, God, I don't know. My visceral reaction is to throw up.
Yeah,
but
sure. It was amazing that
maybe there's a
that Brett Brown was the coach for that lineup and then handed the clipboard to somebody in the stands for the rest of the game.
Yeah,
really shocking stuff. Last thing. Okay, a couple more things about this game, and then we can move on to whatever else you got. I got a couple other thoughts too, but.
There's a couple of good mailbag questions, and I put together a jigsaw that I'm very proud of, actually.
There was one specific play I want to talk about with Simmons, which makes me think that he's just like, there's like a Kawhi-ness to him on defense sometimes, where if he doesn't respect you as like, whether it's as a shooter or a ball handler, or that he just thinks he's quicker than you, I think he just like stands people up and makes them uncomfortable. There was one play when Rudy Gay got the ball around the timeline, and he just like got in his way enough and kind of guessed right that he was going that way and just like took the ball from him and Rudy Gay got called for a foul. And it was just like, you don't see that level of like, not disrespect, but just he's so confident that he can get the ball that he's like gambling on a transition play around half court. And it was just like, we talked about this last time, but people say how, you know, he hasn't been as good on defense this year. And I just disagree. I think he's got so much more room to grow as he like discovers where he can take chances and how he can impact the game, deflection, all that stuff that Covington was so good at. But on a one-on-one stuff, he's unlike anything I've ever seen. It's really impressive to watch him play defense. And we can't say enough how coming out of LSU, or at least watching him at LSU, it was like,
yeah, it was a question.
Yeah, it was like he didn't give a shit about defense because he didn't give a shit about college basketball, as you can see in the Ben Simmons documentary on Showtime. But yeah, that was an incredible play. Next thought, when was the last time, as I'm watching every single game on national television, when was the last time that a national announcer did not talk about TJ being scrappy, the kind of guy you want on your team, doing the little things, any of the same things that they say? And
here's what I want to say. I don't ever hear it because I don't watch the national broadcast ever. The thing I like about TJ has developed like definitely a bit of an attitude this year.
For sure.
Like, he does not think of himself as scrappy guy anymore. And there was a moment today, and like, look, is he like, I think he is, a mostly for a backup point guard, capable enough defender. He's not big. He's not the quickest guy in the world, but I think he's smart enough. He'll have good runs and bad runs. The thing that is amazing to me is there was a moment in the game where he like ripped off 3 straight jumpers, and he is fucking, when he is like in that offensive zone where he wants to go get the shot, go get that like 15 footer. He did like 3 of them in a row.
Every time. They can't stop him from getting to that exact spot. It's inexplicable.
And he doesn't miss them. He's shooting 60% this year.
It's unbelievable.
He's like,
it's DeRozan-esque, honestly, from that spot.
He And so he had like 10 points in 9 minutes, and he went to the bench basically being like, that guy can't fucking guard me. And I love it. I love good TJ.
And he had 8 assists. He had one really nice play. He got an offensive rebound on a JJ missed three and passed it right back to JJ for a three. That's like backbreaking for a defense. Played well. Still, like, you know, you just wish that he was bigger. And I think I think as he gets, the more he plays, the consistency year to year, I think he's going to figure out ways to be able to stick defensively. Because he obviously is a pest, and he makes plays happen, and he's good for an at least one steal in the backcourt a week. But there are still so many times when he just gets abused defensively because he's not big enough or not athletic enough. He's certainly quick enough to play NBA basketball, but I think he's going to find like leverage points defensively where he can, you know, use his strength and lose his base to like knock people off of their spots without getting called for a foul. But right now there are still times when it's like, man, there's a lot of times when it's just like, he's a negative on the court, but other times he's just like, oh, he's our only offense and he's making everything happen.
Yeah. Yeah. He is like, there's a little bit of like a clique of people that complain about him all the time. And does he play too many minutes? For sure. But like, He is a helpful player in a lot of ways at a lot of times. So I'm glad that we have him. All right, before we get to everything else we have, a few other things we definitely have to get to. Our other sponsor and definite member of the Brew Crew, that is LL Pavorsky Jewelers. Mike, I got a tweet from somebody this week, and he said, he goes, I love your ads. He goes, I enjoyed when you guys did them so much for the first 2 weeks that I thought they were all fake advertisers. I was convinced that they were.
Certainly a motley crew of different businesses that support us.
Yeah. Like, you listen to every other podcast and they're like, here's like HelloFresh and LinkedIn and here's the other HelloFresh, whatever that one is. And here's underwear, different underwear. And we're like, personal injury lawyer, jeweler, Dogbed, Mead, Rock School, skateboard place. So anyway, LL is certainly at the heart of that. I feel like we wouldn't have such a weird, lovable collection of sponsors if it wasn't for our very first sponsor, LL Pavorsky Jewelers, who has sold 118 engagement rings to Writes to Ricky Sanchez listeners. When you think about how long he's been sponsoring the podcast, which is about 3 years now, that is a really fucking frightening number of engagement rings and people who have listened to us and gone to buy rings from LL. And you know what? They all walk away happy as a clam.
Or they would if they were real.
Yes. Imagine if those 118 couples all actually existed. They did. LL takes good care of them, gives them a great price, gets great jewelry. And I always talk about the experience walking in there. You go into a lot of jewelry stores, there is a salesperson breathing down your throat. You walk into LL Pavorsky Jewelers, it's just LL, maybe one other person. He's throwing chocolate at you and bottles of water and selling the engagement rings. Go to LL to buy your jewelry, especially engagement rings. He's at 707 Walnut. If you want to buy an engagement ring, call him or email him or tweet him to make an appointment before you go over there. 215-627-2252. And that's for you. That's not for him. He's more than happy to welcome you there. But it will make your visit more efficient. LLPavorsky.com or tweet him at LLPavorsky. For every podcast, LL makes generous donations to our charities, Coded by Kids and the Providence Animal Center. LL Pavorsky Jewelers.
If you guard LL like Corey Brewer on James Harden, you will get thrown out of the store.
That's a fact.
Fact.
Before we get to the Lorenzo Brown mailbag, I have a... I like this week's jigsaw. I'd like to give you a jigsaw. You up for it?
Give it to me.
All right.
Play.
I will play this game.
Game of play.
I will play this game.
I miss you.
I will play this game.
I'm worried. Play.
I will play this game.
And after the game, they were interviewing him, and they said, how does it feel to win the ultimate game? And he said, if it's the ultimate game, why are they playing it again next year?
The jigsaw, where I give you two choices. They're both terrible. You have to pick one. Mike usually picks the wrong one. Here are the two choices. The first one, for the rest of your life, you must talk with an obviously way over the top Southern accent, but only when the topic you're talking about is very serious. You can never explain why. I'm talking Varsity Blues type, really thick draw.
Well, the thing about climate change, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Great.
Or even like, you know, I'm sorry, she has cancer. Sure, you know, yeah, like, just, will you marry me? Okay. You can never explain why. Or 17 times per day, every day, you have to ask someone to repeat what they just said to you. You can't, like, this has to be spread out through your life. You can't just go into 7-Eleven and ask them 17 times and then walk out.
Sure, that would be my first guess.
Yeah.
Let me just go to a 7-Eleven every day and ask a guy to say what they said again.
Well, I'm just saying,
harass the 7-Eleven workers.
There's no cheat codes with any of this. You have to do it 17 times per day. You have to ask somebody to repeat what they've said, or the thick Southern drawl, and anytime you have to talk about something that is very serious.
These are both fun. I wouldn't mind doing either. everybody loves an accent. I think 17 times a day asking someone to repeat themselves is actually not that much. And I think I could.
Oh, really?
I think that would be that wouldn't change my life in any way. It'd be fun to do the Southern accent for a while and get that as like a, oh, Mike, when he gets nervous, he does this. Yeah, talks in Southern accent. But I think that could get old. I think asking people what they say 17 times a day is probably the right bet. And as I get older anyway, that's probably what I'll land on just by accident without even a
joke. So I don't, I came up with this earlier this afternoon and I still don't know the answer. So I don't know what my answer is. I don't think I can do the Southern draw thing. I mean, that makes you a real fucking asshole.
Sure.
But I'm sorry, what did you say? Like,
there you go.
boy, they're both bad. All right. Lorenzo Brown mailbag. Two questions each from Matt. Neither of them have an answer. I just thought they were creative questions. Two different Matts. The first one, any chance you could get the guys at Big Barker to make a Big Barker human bed for Embiid? I'm worried that his back soreness could be the result of a cheap store-bought mattress.
Interesting.
So,
yeah, I do wonder if the Sixers are involved in, or if like NBA teams in general are involved in, like, hey, what mattress do you have? Can we get you one or approve? Because I wonder if it is. Probably.
I sleep on a Tempur-Pedic. I have for about 7 years, and it changed my life. So
you like it? I'm about to get a new mattress.
I love it. It takes, so they're expensive, and it takes some getting used to. It's different than a normal mattress, but it changed my back. Like I sleep in a different way now than I did when I had a different mattress.
How do you sleep?
I love it. I sleep upside down.
Crazy.
This one is also from a different Matt. Corey Brewer is Zaire Smith's dad. That was the whole email.
I can see it.
This is from Vince. This has been suggested to us numerous times, both on Twitter and in email. Will Corey Brewer be the one to slap the hardwood during this year's playoff run?
I sort of think, absolutely. I think that he is, just by sheer, and he might not even do it on purpose. His arms kind of just go wherever he wants. He might just slap the hardwood by mistake, just like waving around, and just like he happened to hit the ground with it.
Mm-hmm.
Do I like that? Do I like that he's taking that from Roten and then TJ? It feels right that it's a 10-day guy, for sure.
Yeah.
That's something about slapping the hardwood, and I think what it appealed to me about Roten was, like, guys who are fighting for their NBA lives in, like, a very intense situation with, like a playoff game at home. And it can't be, and that's the thing, is like you see like college teams do it all at the same time, or once one person does it, then everybody does it. It has to be one person that does it while the opposing team is walking the ball up the court and you're meeting them right in between half court and the 3-point line. That's exactly where it has to be. It can't be like when you're off the ball, you're about to guard the guy. And so that's why it feels like TJ and it felt like Roden, because they would be in that position. We'll see if Brewer can get there. I wouldn't accept it if it's not in that position. That is how I broached it to you all those years ago, early process days. So it has to be there, and it doesn't count if it's not.
Yeah, I told, just to give people background, you originally said it to me when this was the first year, I think, that we were doing the podcast, and you were talking about when we had eventually made the playoffs and Tony Roten would be slapping the hardwood in the playoffs. The next day, I rebought season tickets. I hadn't had them in like a year and a half. I went and got season tickets. Then when we lost Tony, he's not dead, it transferred over to TJ. TJ did sort of promise that he would do it in the playoffs. He didn't do it. I want it to be TJ, but he did have a chance to do it. There was a TJ game. It could have happened there. It didn't happen.
You think he should have done it down 3-0 to Boston, though?
I don't care. It was the TJ McConnell won us a game in the playoffs.
He did.
I would have been okay with it. But yeah, I'm fine with it switching to Corey Brewer. But I do agree with you about when it should happen and how it should happen. You will like this one. This comes from Avi. This isn't a question or anything, but I needed to share. My dad gave me an out-of-print biography from the 70s about Connie Hawkins, the New York blacktop legend who the NBA unjustly blacklisted for years. Eventually, Hawkins sues his way into the league, and the Phoenix Suns snap him up. The Suns' general manager is 29-year-old Jerry Colangelo. This is how the book, published in 1972, first describes Colangelo. Even the Suns' horrendous first-season record couldn't stifle Colangelo's boundless regard for his own abilities. The first time I visited Phoenix, the general manager, without hesitation, handed me three clippings, each a glowing tribute to Jerry Colangelo.
Oh, my God.
The author goes on to describe Colangelo as Machiavellian, quotes him saying, "Cross me and I'll cut off your balls," and says Colangelo, quote, "considers the rulebook an obstacle course." Colangelo also hires his fraternity buddy to coach the Suns, even though the guy can't coach and all the players hate him. Just a friendly reminder that Dave Silver essentially forced us to fire Sam Hinkie and hire a guy who has been a cheating, conniving dick since at least 1972. P.S., the author actually has some sympathy for Colangelo because he pushed to get Hawkins in the league. So this is a description of Colangelo from a guy who kind of likes him.
That's really good. That's really good. And it sounds very familiar. That does not sound like a separate character trait from the Colangelo family we know and have been exposed to and talking about for quite some time. Man, what a piece of shit.
Yep. He's the original one, more than anybody. And the final Lorenzo Brown mailbag, he is looking for some. I did send him some suggestions, but I thought you might have some. From Borja. Hi, he's Spanish, and it's B-O-R-J-A. That's Borja, I would assume, right? Yes?
Sure.
I'm asking you. Yeah. Hold on. I want to drink some water. I'm dying.
You think I'm a guy? You trust me on Borja pronunciation?
Yeah, well, my name is Borja. I am from Spain, and I want to thank you. I listen to every podcast that you record despite of my bad English level. I am improving a lot thanks to your podcasts and Mark and Ala retransmissions. From so many years ago, I am a Sixers fan here in Spain, and because of you, I could be so much close and near them, near the team in the last year. So I want to thank you for allowing me to feel the Sixers in a different way. I love that one. Hopefully one day I could go to one of your process trips. Now in 2 weeks, I will go to New York with my girlfriend for 9 days. My only condition to make the trip was spend 2 days in Philly for watch a Sixers game. And that's it. We will go to Boston at Sixers at the Wells Fargo Center February 12th. And then they're going to the Sixers at Knicks game February 13th. This will be my first time in Philly, a real dream for me, but my third time watching a Sixers game live. The first one was in Bilbao, Spain, the first Hinkie and Brett game. We won with a Hawes three in the last seconds. The second one was in London last year. I traveled there with my little cousin. I want to ask you a favor. I want to watch in Philly the most possible process Sixers things, like the bar of the lottery parties and the Hinkie panel or whatever. If you could say me what I have to watch and visit my 2 days there, I appreciate it a lot. And one more thing, I want your recommendation for the best cheesesteak in the city, please. So obviously I told them where Xfinity Live was. That's where the lottery party is.
And you're a big Pat's Angino's fan.
Well, so I think Pat's and Gino's, well, I'm actually a Pat's guy over Gino's guy, but
I'm surprised
I think they are.
It's so like nothing to me, those places.
Well, here's what I would say is that like people in Philadelphia talk shit on Pat's and Geno's as if it's not good. Yeah. It's good.
Oh, I mean, it's like, good in the sense up. That like it's good. Yeah. Like you get a chicken nugget from somewhere, it's going to be good. You get a cheesesteak from Pat's or Geno's, it's still a cheesesteak, but it's clearly less than the alternatives.
Well, so I told him, I think I gave him a couple. I told him the cheesesteak at John's Roast Pork in South Philly, I think is really, really good. The cheesesteak at Mama's in Bala Cynwyd is really, really good.
I haven't been to that one.
And there's a new one that you haven't been to. I've recommended Tap Room on 19th a lot, which is a bar in South Philly that I like a lot. But the guy, Mike, who owns it, owns a barbecue place in South Philly now called Mike's Barbecue. And they do a brisket cheesesteak, which is like been written about a bunch of times. So that's what I do. Do you have any personal favorites?
I always like a Steve's on the Boulevard.
Yep. Yep. Northeast.
For sure.
Love that.
For sure. Yeah. Del Sandro's. Yeah. Those are probably my favorite.
I told him to go to LL if he wants to do process stuff. I didn't know what else to tell him to do. I told him a couple restaurants, a couple bars. Do you have one recommendation? Is there anything else Sixers he needs to do? Mm.
Are there any Sixers? Process? Let me ask you this. Are there any Sixers like artwork around the city? Like any mural stuff? Because you see that for the Lakers a lot around LA, and I don't know offhand any Sixers ones. And why is that not the case? We should commission some artists to do some cool shit.
Unless there is some stuff left over. There was, during the playoffs last year, when they did the snake logo, there were paintings that went up. I don't know if they're still up there.
There should be like Bannon and Embiid paintings. Like weren't there Iverson ones back in the day? Probably.
There was one big Iverson one right off of 95 and 676 right around there. But I don't remember if there were a ton of them or anything.
I would like that. I would like that to happen. They should be those. I have a couple questions for you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How do you feel about Taurean Prince? And since he has 2 years left on his deal, on his rookie deal, would you be willing to do like a Korkmaz and our first round pick this year for Taurean Prince?
Well, you need, yes, absolutely. But I think he'll cost more than that.
You do?
Yeah. I actually, in the Butler trade thing I wrote, like I actually obviously would take other pieces because of salary, but I think Taurean Prince is, so there are some things about him that are worse than Covington, but one of the things that he's better than Covington is dribbling.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's not as good a defender, obviously. I don't think he's as good. I trust Covington shooting threes better than Prince, but Prince is really good.
He's a good shooter.
And exactly what we need, like a low-cost wing defender guy. So, yes, I would trade that in a second. I think it would take more.
I wonder if you could, it could be like our first this year and a second. Because it's, you know, they're the Hawks.
Yeah.
He's sort of fallen out of the rotation a little bit anyway.
Yeah, they must not like him, obviously. Or they think now's the time to trade him because they're not going to want to pay him.
I don't know.
I really
I really would like him very much. And I'm not, because it's a 2-year deal, because there's 2 years left, I'd be willing to trade the first round pick. I would really be reluctant to trade our first this year for half a season of somebody. I just don't like the idea of that, because they're going to have to, as we've talked about before, there's going to be so much roster turnover from year to year. Because of guys just expiring. I think at this point, JJ's coming back. We'll see what happens elsewhere, but I think he's coming back. He's having the best season of his career on the offensive end. I think that, but Taurean Prince would be a guy that you just put in right away. So I like him. Other thing, this is kind of an Eaglesy thing, and I meant to talk about it last time, but as Fultz is on the bench, it made me think about it again. When
maybe Fultz should play for the Eagles.
Sure, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
So Alshon Jeffrey, obviously tough end of the season there. It seemed to me, and obviously this is because of the Super Bowl win, but it seemed to me like everyone was pretty cool with it and like on his side. And you know, he went to like an elementary school that wrote him a nice letter, and everyone was excited. And he's been to Sixers games and gotten huge applause. Like, it made me think about Fultz and how this, they went from like being a, you know, I mean, Philly's not the most, traditionally has not been historically the most pleasant fan base around guys who aren't performing up to their standards. And like for the leash that we gave Fultz of like how much rope he'd have to, you know, mess up and try and get a big round of applause and all that stuff. Like it seemed
a
like
lot of rope.
So much rope. And it seemed like the Super Bowl really just changed the city in a fundamental way. And the Alshon thing made me think about it. And do you think, like, how long does that last? Do you think? Obviously, Fultz has, I don't know about worn out his welcome, but it's gotten a little bit more mixed than just, like, only support. But it's been, like, nice. It's been, everyone's, like, nice. And have people just died out and only nice people remain?
I think I actually have a theory on this, believe it or not. I think that I wonder if you're going to buy this. I think that computer people have figured out, like between Facebook and Netflix and all those things, is figured out how to feed us things that we like, right? And I think it's funny, like when we log into, there was a thing where we logged into my wife's Netflix and we were looking for a movie that I would like something slow and dark and sad or sci-fi-y. And everything was like Hallmark movies and dog movies. And she was like, why does Netflix look like this? And I was like, because it's your Netflix. And she's like, what are you talking about? And we logged into mine and it was obviously completely different. I think there is something going on with people in general where they don't like hearing about things that they're not used to encountering things that make them unhappy more. So I think people's existence is like, in a lot of ways, more conflict-free than it used to be. And I don't mean in terms of politics. Everybody thinks about people fighting. I mean that the reason that there's so much fighting there is because everyone is so used to getting things the way they want it. So long story short, I think people are just don't want that anymore. Like I think like people are softer than they used
Are you saying that I'm getting algorithmed out of seeing like people saying shitty things to Alshon or
no,
to Fultz? Or do you think
I think people are getting algorithmed into not being that way.
Interesting.
Like I think
more predisposed to believe the first one than the second one because there is a lot. Like, people are still fired up and pissed off, and Brett Brown should be fired, and all the other stuff. Have you noticed? Obviously, like running a radio station in Philly, like are people generally more pleasant?
So we talked about it today. What they're weird about, what they're not pleasant about, is things that they are less willing to believe something bad and they get mad at it. Like this whole Wentz story that's been going on, right? Like their first reaction is, that guy that wrote it's a fucking liar. Fuck him. There's nothing wrong with Wentz. And even like Fultz, you remember how like the reaction when I said like I didn't have a good vibe, like I wasn't confident about the Fultz thing. Like this was in preseason when everybody was happy. I was like, man, I don't know, something's wrong. People were really, really mad at me. That's what they get mad at. It's like a different thing. We were talking about it at work today. Think about this. Remember, Cole Hamels was World Series MVP, right? And the next year he got booed off the mound in his first start. And he said later on, he had a horrible season and said later, bad season later on that year, that part of what he did was he spent too much time in the offseason doing commercials and not paying attention to being a pitcher anymore. So the Eagles, like Nick Foles is writing a book, Doug Peterson's writing a book, Lane Johnson's talking about how it's better to be on the Eagles than the Patriots, like all offseason. They come in and they stink and everybody's like, I don't know. Everything's all right. Like they booed in that first game, but they weren't mad like they used to be. I do think that that people are changing and they still get frustrated. They still get mad, but they get mad about different things. The Alshon thing is pretty puzzling. Like in a very like flat, normal way, yeah. what he did, the way he screwed up is not really that much different with how Cody Parkey screwed up. And yeah. Cody Parkey like was getting death threats. And we were like so busy telling Alshon that everything was okay. It was almost like more than if he had succeeded.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing, man. People are changing. I think the internet is changing.
I think it's nice. I think you can, the, you know, some algorithm stuff is weird and freaky, but I think surrounding yourself with people that are like, hey, like that happens. He didn't have a drop the whole postseason. He was great. Like he's part of the reason why we're here. Won us the Super Bowl. Like that could happen to anybody.
I agree with you there, but I think the thing that we're losing is the ability to have any sort of actual debate about anything.
I think on Twitter and stuff, I think you can still have a debate on a podcast forum. We've certainly had plenty. I think there's still on a conversation on a human level, I think it still exists.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, well, unfortunately within the next 5 to 7 years, we won't have any conversations on human level.
That's right. So. Kick them off, baby. Yeah. Let's win a title before then.
Anything else before we go?
No, I feel good. Let's win some more. Who do they got next? They get this, the 4-game road trip.
Yeah. They have a game Saturday. Denver.
They got Denver. They got the Lakers. I'm going to try to go to that game, I think. So we'll see how that
Denver,
goes.
Denver, Lakers, Sacramento, Golden State are the 4 games.
Yeah.
I don't know the order. But
yeah. It'd be nice to win two of those. It'd be nice to win two of those. And I think LeBron will still be out, even though it'd probably be better for my pilot if Simmons and LeBron played against each other. That would be nice.
Well, fingers crossed.
We should hear soon. I don't know. If you feel like tweeting at NBC to pick up my show, I can't stop you.
Okay. Everyone should do that. Just at NBC.
Yeah, I don't fucking know. Who cares?
Question. Should I name... I've been thinking about the title of this podcast. Your choice. Corey Brewer, Save the Sixers Season, or Eat It, Marco Bellinelli.
Yeah, I got to go Bellinelli. Fuck that guy.
Okay. All
right. Brett Brown ran a pick and roll right at him the first possession he came in. It was really great. And they should have done it more. Bellinelli, who had a great... Yeah. Shooting game, by the way. That's what he does. He occasionally just hits shots when he's perpendicular to the floor or parallel to the floor. 5 for 9 for 16 points. Still a -4. Still all that stuff. He is a net negative on the court because he's so bad defensively. Get out of here. We don't need him. He's terrible. I hate that we have to keep hearing about him. And there's 96 more national TV games in the next 3 weeks that I have to hear fucking Mark Jackson and Chris Webber and Reggie Miller and whoever the fuck talk about and fucking Tim Legler. Just, yeah. Tell me how much we miss Bellinelli and Ilyasova. Oh, God damn it.
He was the original Spike's an asshole and doesn't really like the Sixers guy when I said that I didn't like him.
I do love the confetti game. It's still one of my favorite Sixers moments of all time, even though they did lose that game.
Well, that's what makes it better is that they lost that game. All right. We will talk to you Sunday. We'll be back Sunday after the Nuggets game, unless something weird Sixers-y happens. Are you down with TT?
Yeah, you know Lickface.
We are the murderers there. That with the jail and we murdered the murderers there. Then with the hell and discovered the devil delivered some hurt and despair. Used to have powder to push. Now I smoke pounds of the push. Holy, I'm burning the bush. Now I give a fuck about none of this shit. Two runner over and out of this bitch. Step into the spotlight. Copying of uppers and downers get done. I'm in a rush to be numb. Dropping 1,000 ain't much. Come from the clouds on a missile to